بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. We begin in the name of God, the infinitely compassionate and infinitely merciful. May we be with the breath for a few moments as we listen to the reed. Allowing the breath to settle us here. Breathing out any tensions, breathing in the new life of this moment. Opening to the presence of the One who holds us and breathes through us. Breath by breath, may we open to that presence of the Divine. Even a home. Welcome. If at any point anyone can't hear me, sometimes my voice gets a little low, just wave your hand. Perhaps you could hear something in the sound of the reed, this reed or nay flute, as it's called, has been for a long time a metaphor for the longing of the soul. And Mevlana Jalaluddin Rumi begins his masterwork, his Masnavi, with the lines of listen to the reed and the tale it tells, how it sings of separation and that longing for the return to union. We've been reminded a number of times in our moments here of that call of need and longing, and reminded to increase that longing, to increase that need, that it might be fulfilled in one of his poems. Mevlana tells us to not let our need be like a little nibbly mouse, but make it a great need, that the sea of abundance might surge forth to respond. And he offers some words about the journey and how, even though sometimes we may not realize it, that one is always there, ready to meet our needs, accompanying us, calling to us. He says, "When I want to leave, you hold my feet and won't let me go. You steal my heart and sit on top of it. Because of the secret you whispered and the moon you revealed, love's wind whirls in my head and my heart loses its hands and feet. You pass many nights in vigil and soar across this sky dome with the wings of fasting, in love with flight. You saw me lost, waving and crying, and said, 'I am the guide. I'll show you the road for which you have been searching. I'm hidden behind the wall, and yet I'm right beside you. You're oppressed and suffering, yet I am near. You who are anxious to get where you think you're going, I'll make your dreams come true. I'll cook well every pot you try to boil. My friend, you thought you lost him, that all your life you've been separated from him. Filled with wonder, you've always looked outside for him and haven't searched within your own house. The funny part is that in this search, beauty has always accompanied you. Wherever you have been, he is the one holding your hand. Keep looking for him, with him. You and he are on the same road. Oh, beloved, you're so obvious, you're hidden from sight." Sometimes these reminders come through the great friends of the way. Sometimes the words or example of a prophet. Sometimes an older friend or a parent, sometimes a younger one. There's a wonderful story of Abdul Qadir Gilani in the 1100s. When he was a very young man and his mother had raised him with great care, a woman of deep spirit, and he came to the age of 18 and felt, well, it was time for him to set out on the road and go into the world. So he asked his mother's permission. And she said, "Of course, my son." And She gave him his inheritance for him to take with him, and it was 40 gold coins. And then as he was departing, she gave him some parting advice and said to him, "My son, always tell the truth." So Abdul Qadir set out and joined a caravan. And it wasn't long before some brigands attacked the caravan. And the thieves were passing through, trying to find valuables to take. And the head of the thieves came to Abdul Qadir and said, "Do you have any valuables?" And Abdul Qadir said, "Yes, I have 40 gold coins sewn in the hem of my cloak." And the thief said, "Really, I'm serious. Do you have any valuables?" And Abdul Qadir looked at him and said, "Yes, I have 40 gold coins sewn in the bottom of my cloak." He was this young man standing there in very simple clothes. And the thief said, "You know, this isn't a game. I'm not fooling around, really. Do you have any valuables?" And Abdul Qadir said, "Yes, I have 40 gold coins sewn in the bottom of my cloak. Here, I'll show you." And he proceeded to open the hem of his cloak to show him the gold. And the thief was just stunned. And he turned to Abdul Qadir and he said, "Why? You know, why did you tell me? Why did you reveal this when you could have so easily kept it hidden?" And Abdul Qadir looked at him and said, "This was my inheritance from my mother. And when she gave it to me as I left home, she told me, always tell the truth. How could I so quickly turn from her advice as to lie to a thief?" And the thief was just overcome in this moment by this young man and became his first companion on the journey. And Abdul Qadir is one that we look to as one of the first who began a lineage within the Sufi tradition in the 1100s. So this reminder comes in many ways. Another beautiful story is of Abdullah Tirmidhi. And in this way that has been inspired by the example of Muhammad in the Quran as well, there is the saying that marriage is half the faith. And Abdullah and her husband were both very devoted. And as many of us in this life now found themselves householders with young children, and in the midst of all of that, we're very devoted to their Lord and spent time in prayer. And for Abdullah, much of the conversation with the beloved happened with her also in dreams. And one night in her dream, she was visited by this beautiful presence, a man who came to her and spoke to her, saying that she should remind her husband that on the day of reckoning there would be scales placed, and not to weigh flour or sugar, but to weigh the tongue and the witnesses of the tongue, the hands and feet. and to remind her husband to always keep his house pure, to keep their house pure. And she was troubled for a moment because she said, I have small children. And it's, you know, challenging for us to keep the house really tidy and clean of, you know, purity. And he said, no, you know, it's this house I'm speaking of and the tongue. And he held with him two bunches of leaves, one bundle of fragrant herbs and another a bundle of green leaves, of myrtle leaves. And he offered them to her, saying that the fragrant herbs, he would travel as an angel of God, would travel the earth and bring to those who were devoted worshipers, to bring that fragrance to them, to increase their worship. And the myrtle, the evergreen leaves, were for those devoted who were, had drawn near to God, as a reminder of that, the evergreenness of God's presence and the justness of God's presence. So he gave her these two bundles of herbs and myrtle. And she asked, should she also give some of these to her husband? And he said, no, she should save these for herself, and that he would bring some to her husband as well, that they were together in the same place. So we never know where these reminders will come, where the friendship will come. We have a friend in Turkey, a young man who whose mother was very devoted, and this was not long ago in Konya. She one day had a knock on her door, and there was a man standing there who she didn't know. And she inquired and invited him in, and he said, well, he had come because he was sent by his sheikh from a village quite some distance away to ask her if she would lead a Naqshbandi women's circle of worship. And she looked at him very puzzled and said, well, you know, very grateful for the invitation, but she didn't know his sheikh, and this way she wasn't sure what to do. And the man said, don't worry, you know, my sheikh has seen you in the inner worlds, and he will provide you with what you need through dreams. So this began a time for her of sharing with women in her community and prayer and worship, and eventually connecting in this reality as well with this particular teacher. In the journey of the soul, there have been so many who have come to teach us and share with us the remembrance of God. In the Quran, it reminds us of many of the prophets of the Abrahamic tradition. And one of the lesser known, Luqman, has some beautiful words that he shares with his son that I'd just like to share with you. Oh, my dear son, continued Luqman, If there were anything the weight of even a mustard seed, and it were within a rock, or in the heavens, or on earth, God will bring it to light. For God comprehends the subtlest mysteries and is all aware. Oh, my dear son, be constant in prayer. Encourage what is just and forbid what is wrong, and bear with patient perseverance whatever comes to you. Witness, this is something upon which to set one's heart. And do not turn away from people with pride, nor walk in insolence on the earth. For God does not love the arrogant boaster. And be modest in your bearing and lower your voice, for without a doubt, the harshest of sounds is the braying of the ass. And then in the same surah, Luqman, named after the prophet, as many of the surahs are, said, whoever submits his or her whole self to God and is a doer of good has indeed grasped the most trustworthy handhold. For with God rests the final outcome of all endeavors. There have been many examples of ways of life, too, that have been given to us, and patterns of prayer. In the Islamic tradition, we have the beauty of the five daily prayers that we're encouraged to do. And this rhythm of prayer is part of many traditions. It's wonderful to take moments throughout the day to come into conversation with the beloved. And even if it's just a short pause in the early morning, at midday, in the afternoon, the evening, the night, to just take a few moments. The ritual prayer itself is not long, and even for those who may not observe that, to take those moments in the midst of work or at home, to just pause and be in remembrance. It's a beautiful rhythming of the day and provides this possibility of coming into relationship with the beloved. Shamsi Tabriz has a few words in his Maqalat that remind us of some of the reason why some of this pattern may have been shared with large communities. He says, the worship and work of Muhammad, may peace and blessings of God be upon him, was immersion in divine contemplation. This was his real focus, was this continual immersing in the divine. He said, the work is the work of the heart. Service is service of the heart. And servanthood is servanthood from the heart. But one can reach that universe of divine contemplation and witnessing through annihilating oneself in the greatness of God. Now, Muhammad knew it wasn't possible for everyone to engage in this deepest of contemplation and worship. It is not to everyone that this greatest happiness has been given. And so it came to give to his community these 5 times a day prayers of Salah and the 30 days of fasting a year and the traditions of the pilgrimage, so that the community might not be deprived of that witnessing of the miraculous manifestation of God in the hidden realm, so that they might also be liberated and understand their place of benefit, and that perhaps the fragrance from that happiness of divine contemplation might also reach them. And Shem says, if this weren't the case, what relationship would there be between hunger in fasting and servanthood before God? Why else would there be these open invitations of the ways of faith and worship? There's a wonderful story about Fatima, the daughter of the Prophet Muhammad, and her husband Ali in the early days of the community. They also had a family, small children, and worked very hard. And at the time, Fatima was a grinder of corn, and Ali would carry water. And there was a time when they had become very tired and had been working very hard, and Fatima's hands were blistered from her work, and Ali was just exhausted. And it had become a time for Muhammad when, as a result of his prophecy and the leadership of the community, he had, you know, grown in his responsibility. And was heading a large community of people. And Ali turned to Fatima one day and said, you know, maybe you could ask your father if there's someone who could help us some with our work. And Fatima was somewhat hesitant, but she reflected, and then she went to see her father. But once she was in his presence, she was too reserved to even ask. And she just greeted him and gave him her love and then went back home again. And when she came home, Ali questioned her as to what had happened. And she said, well, she was sorry, but she couldn't bring herself to even ask. And so Ali said, well, Let's go again and just ask. And so they went together to the Prophet, and he listened to them and said, well, I understand, but there's only so much that's possible, and there are the people, the Alal Sufa, these were people of the bench who were very close to the Prophet, and he felt their need was greater, that they needed more support. So Fatima and Ali went home. And later that night, there was a knock on the door. And they asked, come in. And it was her father, the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him. And they started to rise to greet him. And he said, no, just, stay where you are. And he sat down with them. And he said, perhaps I might give you something better than what you asked for. And he said the angel Gabriel had come to him and given him these 3 sayings that he wanted to share with them. Subhanallah, this is glory to God. God is subtle beyond all knowing. Alhamdulillah, all praise to God, to that one, and Allahu Akbar, God. is the most great. And so he encouraged them to say these after each prayer. And Ali later in his life said that from that moment he had always said these after every prayer, and it had been of incredible support and sustenance and aid to him. And since that time, it's become a part of the practice of the prayer for most Muslims as well. There are so many glorifications going on all the time. We're told that the rocks and the leaves of the trees and the mountains and everything in existence is glorifying God in every moment. And there is that love that then is called forth. How might we look with that eye of love? Shamsi Tabriz tells another wonderful story about Layla and Majnun, who some of you may have heard of in the lore of Sufism, this young man and woman. Majnun was head over heels in love with Layla, and they were kept separate. And this love really deepened and burned in him. And their story had become so famous that there was a sultan, Harun al-Rashid, who was so taken with this story that he wanted to see Layla. And he was just, you know, wondering about this beautiful woman, that she could cause such a love in this young man. So he sent word out and, you know, tried through all these different means to find a way to bring her to the palace, and finally succeeded in bringing her to the palace and had her placed in a little room and went to see her, you know, looking through a window and just looking upon her through the evening as with the candlelight as she was sitting there. And he was very puzzled, and then he thought, well, he would draw closer, and he came into her presence, and he was looking at her, and he thought, well, perhaps her beauty is more visible when she speaks. So he turned to her and he said, are you Layla? And she turned to him and she said, yes, but you are not Majnun. The eyes that are in Majnun's head are not in yours. So Shams reminds us with this story that, you know, we may seek knowledge, and knowledge may have its benefits, but to look with the eye of love is the way that we wish to be with the beloved. There are some beautiful prayers that have been shared over the years. In many of the traditions, many have their own particular formulation of prayers, of this way of speaking with the beloved, of being in that presence, of reminders of deepening in that presence. And I'd like to invite us just to take some moments within and listen to just a short portion of the Mevlevi pattern, the beginning of the daily prayers. So if we might just return to the breath. opening with the breath, allowing the breath to open in us. Opening to this moment. With each moment, we have a new opportunity. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. O our sustainer, you are peace, and from you comes all peace, and our ultimate return is to you, to peace. O our sustainer, continually you enliven us with peace. Allow us to enter your garden, the abode of peace. O our sustainer, bless us with peace. With your peace you have exalted everything. O Lord of majesty and infinite generosity, all praise and glory belongs to you. Limitless are you in your glory. We could not worship you as you truly ought to be worshipped, O you who are worshipped. Subtle are you beyond all knowing. We could not know you as you truly ought to be known, O you who are the object of knowledge. All praise is due to God, who guides one to well-being. O God, grant me light in my heart, light in my grave, light in front of me, light behind me, light to my right, light to my left, light above me, light below me, light in my ears, light in my eyes, light on my skin, light in my hair, light within my flesh, light in my blood, light in my bones. O God, increase my light everywhere. O God, grant me light in my heart, light on my tongue, light in my eyes, light in my ears, light to my right, light to my left. Light above me, light below me, light in front of me, light behind me, and light within myself. Increase my light. For many centuries, there were centers of training and of sharing in this journey together with friends on the way, where music was shared and prayer, work in the garden, cooking. Some of you may be somewhat familiar with the turning ceremony of the Mevlevis. And the training for this would begin in the kitchen. There is a sense in which the human being is continually in this process of being cooked. And one would actually begin this training of learning the whirling barefoot on salt, and the foot would get cooked as one turns. There was a wonderful man who was the cook for Mevlana. His name was Ateshbaz, which means the one who plays with fire. And there was a time when he was cooking a meal, waiting for Mevlana's return from a long journey. And as he was cooking, he was realizing that the wood was about to be used up and the meal wasn't going to be completed cooking. And he was concerned about this. And then it came to him to put his foot in the fire, to continue the fire to burn. And as he watched, he realized that the fire was continuing to cook the food, but his foot was not being burned. And for a moment, he doubted that that was possible. And in that moment, his left toe was singed. So the meal was cooked, and Mevlana came back from his journey. And when Ateshbaz went to greet him, he stood before him and bowed. Covering that moment of doubt, that moment of humanly doubt that comes to us sometimes, and bowing in humility. Ever since that time, in remembrance and witnessing again, we in the Mevlevi tradition and also in many of the other Sufi traditions bow in that same way. And in a little while, I'd like to invite you all to share some movement together, and we'll remember that for a moment in our movement. Today, it's said that, in a way, modern life is already so challenging that it's not as necessary to be in a center in the same traditional way, that life is continually cooking us. Mevlana has a wonderful poem I'd like to share with you about that. And just welcoming what comes and taking the benefit that one can and offering up again and again. Darling, the body is a guest house. Every morning, someone new arrives. Within, don't say, oh, another weight around my neck, or your guest will fly back to nothingness. Whatever enters your heart is a guest from the invisible world. Entertain it well. Every day and every moment, a thought comes like an honored guest into your heart. My soul, regard each thought as a person, for every person's true value is in the quality of the thought they hold. If a sorrowful thought stands in the way, it is also preparing the way for joy. It furiously sweeps your house clean, in order that some new joy may appear from the source. It scatters the withered leaves from the bough of the heart, in order that fresh green leaves might grow. It uproots the old joy so that a new joy may enter from beyond. sorrow pulls up the rotten root that was hidden from sight. Whatever sorrow takes away or causes the heart to sacrifice, it puts something better in its place, especially for one who is certain that sorrow is the servant of the intuitive. Without the frown of clouds and lightning, the vines would be burned by the smiling sun. Both good and bad luck become guests in your heart, like planets traveling from sign to sign. When something transits your sign, adapt yourself and be as harmonious as its ruling sign, so that when it rejoins the moon, it will speak kindly to the Lord of the heart. Whenever sorrows come again, meet it with smiles and laughter, saying, O my Creator, save me from its harm, and do not deprive me of its good. Lord, remind me to be thankful. Let me feel no regret if its benefit passes away. And if the pearl is not in sorrow's hand, let it go and still be pleased. Increase your sweet practice. Your practice will benefit you at another time. Someday, your need will be suddenly fulfilled. So as we journey through this life, if we can continually open to that meeting with whatever comes, looking to see what is really being given in that. And as has been mentioned, this verse from the Quran, wherever you look, wherever you turn, there is the face of God. So I'd like to invite us to stand.